Hey there, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. In this podcast, I'm doing a book review on the book Psych. It's a book on how to achieve optimal mental focus during competition. And definitely was a really interesting read. You know, at first, to be totally honest with you, I didn't know whether to take the book seriously with a title like that. But after looking at it and kind of getting a little bit of a background on the author, I decided, yeah, it'd be worth checking out. And what really kind of piqued my interest is the guy that wrote it. His name is Judd Biasiotto. I hope I'm saying that right. And he's a power lifter and also a doctor of psychology, so he's got real-world experience on both sides there. But the thing that makes him interesting to me is how he used his mind to help overcome his lack of natural gifts. He spent 2 years competing, and he was nowhere near the top of any meet. He was, in his own words, you know, the worst power lifter in the world. And after a couple of years, he started to learn how to focus better and focus his mind during competition better, and that allowed him to start to rise through the ranks, and he eventually became one of the top power lifters in the world. So Psych is his insights and lessons from, you know, someone who's had a lot of unique personal and professional experiences. And, you know, I, you know, like I said, got a lot out of it and took some good notes. And so I wanted to share that stuff with you. So, so diving into it, the first thing he started out talking about was the Academy, which was an organization that was founded by the Kansas City Royals owner. He never gives the exact date in the book. If he did, I missed it. But this had to be sometime in the 60s and, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And the reason that I say that is that one of their goals was to their ultimate goal was to figure out how to manufacture a baseball player, for lack of a better term. Like, if you could just take a great athlete and then turn him into a baseball player. And so they were trying to figure out the different traits and things of a baseball player, and you know, could they teach them to just anybody? And so that was kind of their ultimate goal. But at the time, there was a thing in sports, and this is still something that, you know, talked about every once in a while today, is the idea of the black athlete, and the black athlete having a genetic gifts and a predisposition to excelling at sports. And so that was one of the things that they studied at the Academy. And it turned out that it really boiled down to not genetics. And the main thing that it boiled down to was time spent practicing and playing their sport. And again, if anybody's, you know, read Outliers, or, you know, there's a lot of different books, you know, the Talent Code or Talent is Overrated. There's several books out there that talk about this idea of 10,000 hours of practicing and playing your sport, or, you know, it's basically 10,000 hours of doing anything with focus, which is something that I'll talk about here in a second, not just doing it mindlessly. But that 10,000 hour mark seems to consistently come up as that level where mastery starts to be achieved and the highest levels of performance are seen with people in different fields, from music and sports to science and mathematics and all of that, after they've accumulated that 10,000 hours. So what it basically boiled down to was that the quote-unquote black athlete was accumulating more time practicing and playing their sport than the non-black athlete. Other factors were how well the athletes knew their sport. So knowledge of the sport and how well they knew it played a role, and also just their mental confidence and kind of mental attitude towards how they dealt with setbacks and stuff like that. So all of these factors were not genetic, which was kind of the good news out of this, is that you know, really anyone can achieve greatness in what they're pursuing if they understand how to apply these lessons and how to focus on the right stuff at the right time. So that was kind of the overall takeaway from the beginning of the book. Another thing that I liked, he talked about how the mind is very sensitive to inputs, and you need to keep filling it with positive thoughts and experiences. And so, you know, this is just important on an overall just kind of life basis. You know, there's a saying that you are the average of the five people that you hang out with the most. And there's a lot of truth to that. And part of that is also, are they positive people? Do you hang out with positive people? You know, do you make a point of trying to, have positive messages? I mean, just myself personally, one of the things that I've done is I don't watch the news. There's never any good news on. And so if you're constantly watching the news, which is, these 24-hour news channels, and they're constantly hitting you with negative, bad news, it's going to affect how you look at the world. So, you know, that's kind of a little bit bigger outside the scope of just necessarily mountain biking. But, you know, how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so just be sensitive to the inputs that you're letting in, because your brain's very sensitive to that stuff. Another thing that I took away was that the brain cannot tell the difference between a real and an imagined event. And this is why visualization can be so powerful. And what this means is that if you imagine doing something, your body will react physically in a very similar manner to same way than if the thing was actually happening. So imagining yourself getting into a confrontation with someone that you don't like, you can feel your muscle tension increase. You can feel your heart rate and your blood pressure increase. And so it's not real. It's just in your head. But your mind literally cannot tell the difference. And so it starts to tell the body to react in a similar way. And so, again, this is why visualization can be such a powerful tool for an athlete, because in the right hands, it helps you learn how to focus on the right things. And so one of the things that I really got that he talked about was that when you are using visualization, that you want to think more about how an action feels, you know, internally, better than how it looks externally. And experienced athletes will get more out of visualization than inexperienced athletes. And I think that's mainly for this reason, because they have better body awareness. And so when they imagine themselves doing something, they can really recreate in their mind how it feels, you know, where the tension is, where they're holding themselves up, where they want to stay loose and relaxed. And so that ability to focus internally on how riding feels rather than externally and how it looks will help you get much more out of visualization. And again, that's just something that comes with experience. And you got to make sure that you're not visualizing bad technique though, because bad visualization habits can do more harm than good visualization habits can help. So good visualization habits are obviously very important. What that's saying is that you just want to be very careful. This is it's a very powerful weapon, and it can be misused if you don't think about how you're using it. And so again, focusing on how things feel more than how they look, and is more what you're looking for, and making sure that you understand what good technique is, so that as you're visualizing it, you're ingraining those good habits. There's five steps for visualization. One is to induce a deep muscle relaxation, and you can do that through meditation. Deep muscle relaxation itself is a technique that he details in the book that you can check out. But once you've induced relaxation, you want to visualize as vividly as possible. And that's an important point that, excuse me, if you're not visualizing, you want to be there. You want to feel it. You want to smell it. You know, the more vivid you can make it, the better, the more you're going to get out of it. You want to make sure that you're mentally rehearsing movement. And, you know, I don't know if maybe they have this problem in other sports more. I can't imagine visualizing a static position with mountain biking, but apparently some people do, for some reason, mentally rehearse different static positions rather than mentally rehearsing the movements. And so you want to make sure that you're mentally rehearsing the movements and not just a series of static positions when you're using visualization. Using internal imagery, and again, this is basically another way of saying focus on how something feels rather than how it looks, and focus on the internal more than the external. Number five is be realistic. And, you know, the main thing with this is just, you know, you need to, while this is very powerful stuff, you know, this isn't going to, if you're a Cat 2 racer, this isn't going to make you a top pro overnight. So if your visualization is including you doing things that just aren't realistic for your current skill and fitness levels, then the visualization is not going to be useful. So again, just make sure that you're you know, visualizing something maybe that's a little bit beyond what you can currently do, that is definitely trying to jump over a hurdle, you know, rather than, you know, trying to jump over a whole mountain at once. And then I guess there's actually a step six here that I wrote down, and that's don't use negative imagery. I don't know if that's necessarily a step as much as another, just something you want to keep in mind, but it's kind of like the old saying on the trail, look where you want to go, not where you don't want to go, you know, so don't stare at the big rock that you don't want to hit, like stare at the trail that you want to ride next to the rock. And it's the same thing here. You want to make sure that you're focusing on what you want to do, not what you don't want to do. Don't sit and imagine and tell yourself, don't, you know, lean too much in the corners or whatever, you know, your issue may be. It's imagine yourself doing it properly. So again, subtle things, but it's just making sure, again, it goes back to that input of the brain. If you're using negative imagery, you're putting negative input into the brain, and your brain's very sensitive to that stuff. So make sure you're trying to frame it in a positive way. The next thing that he got into was the difference between cognitive and physical stress before a competition. And anyone who's ever competed or just, you know, had any sort of like high pressure situation where you feel like there is definitely a lot riding on how you perform, whether it was a job interview or, like I said, a race, or, you know, asking your girlfriend, hopefully future wife, to marry you or anything like that, you've experienced stress. And there's two types of stress. And the first is the cognitive stress. And the cognitive stress is the mental stress, things like worry and self-doubt. These tend to raise before competition and then drop once competition is started. And the more experienced an athlete is, the sooner they can get that stress level to start dropping back down. So an inexperienced athlete, let's say, for example, we're talking about a mountain bike racer. An inexperienced racer will start to get nervous, start to worry, start to have those thoughts of self-doubt, and they'll start, you know, probably the day, a couple days before the race, and they will kind of build up to the race, even to the day of the race, and going and registering and kind of going through the pre-race ritual. Those things will continue to build, and at least, you know, maybe not build, but kind of stay there. But it seems like once the race starts, once you kind of are able to get going, that cognitive stress tends to go away. Now you got something else to focus on, and so that tends to go away. But the more experienced you are, the sooner you can get that to start happening. So instead of waiting until you're starting your race before that mental stress starts to go away, the worry and self-doubt start to go away, you can start to get that to happen the morning of the race or the day before the race. But you start to be able to learn how to deal with that the more experienced that you are. The physical stress are things like increased heart rate and muscle tension. And the interesting thing, unlike cognitive stress, they found that pretty much all cognitive stress is detrimental to performance. I mean, you know, worry and self-doubt are definitely not going to help you. But a certain amount of physical stress will actually improve your performance. So if you think about that, you know, you want to have an increased level of readiness when you're getting ready to compete. You want to have that adrenaline. You want to have that increased heart rate, that increased muscle tension, ready to perform. But if it becomes too much, if it starts to become, you know, too much stress, too much tension, the heart rate becomes too high, now it can actually take away from the performance. So you don't want to come into your performance, you know, like basically the same level you would be sitting on the couch watching TV, but you don't need to come in just hyped up like you just had like five Red Bulls, you know. So we've probably all experienced both ends, like coming in not quite, you know, focused enough, and then also just being too hyped. And that's one of the things with mountain biking. that you need to keep in mind is that, you know, getting too hyped, because the sport requires reaction and fine muscle motor control and things like that. So if you have too much tension and stuff, then it can start to interfere with that. So so keep that in mind. So all mental stress and anxiety is bad at performance, but it can be controlled through experience, practice, and relaxation techniques. And like I said, the physical stress, you can you're going to learn over time what is enough and what starts to be too much. And so so again, some interesting stuff to keep in mind. The next thing he talked about was trait, different types of anxiety. And there's trait versus state anxiety. And trait is basically your disposition, and state is how you are reacting to a specific situation. So trait is just kind of like your natural outlook. If you're a laid-back person, then you're naturally just not going to get as stressed out. You know, your anxiety levels aren't going to be as high in most situations. But the state is the specific situation. And so you can have someone, say, for example, that you have a low trait anxiety level. You tend to be pretty mellow. Things don't really get you worked up, but you're scared to death of spiders. And you find yourself in a room with a spider and no way out. Like, that state anxiety is going to be very high. But you can also have someone who tends to run pretty hot, who's very, tends to be pretty anxious and whatnot. But there's certain situations, like, say, riding, for example. When it comes time to ride, all of a sudden it's like a different person. They become, their anxiety levels actually will decrease, and they're able to focus. And so, again, it's just kind of keeping in mind the difference between trait and state, and that even though you may naturally be a bit of a high-strung person, that you can train yourself to have low anxiety levels in certain situations. So that was kind of what I took away from that. One of the things that he went into a lot was the concept of learning how to relax, and then systematically introduce stressful thoughts about competition while maintaining that relaxed state. And so he talked about things like deep muscle relaxation. And like I said, he actually went into depth in the book about how to do that technique. He talked about something called biofeedback, which is using your machines that allow you to kind of see your own heart rate and breathing rate, and something about being able to look at a screen and see what a number is allows you to kind of manipulate and control your stress levels better. And then meditation. I think most people are pretty familiar with meditation. And I think for most of us, myself included, as I was reading through the book, I was thinking that, meditation is probably the most practical one for me. But the idea is to use some method to learn how to enter a very relaxed state. And then, like I said, you want to systematically introduce stressful thoughts about competition while maintaining that relaxed state. Now, what this does is it teaches the body to associate what you would usually think of as a stressful stimulus with the relaxed state. Your body cannot be anxious and relaxed at the same time. And so let's say, for example, that the race that you tend to really get hyped up right before the start of the race, and you find that you're almost a little too anxious. Your physical stress levels are too high before the race. And we want to learn kind of how to stay relaxed and keep those low. And so you would start by meditating. You would learn how to, induce a deep state of relaxation. And then once you're able to do that and you have control of that, then as you're relaxed, you start to think about vividly, use visualization to think about these situations that bring about the anxiety. So again, sticking with our example, you would start to think about, the race starting, if it's a mass start, the riders, get your bike and get ready, and you got your bike and you're, getting ready to go, or whatever the case may be in the gate, or, whatever your racing is. But if it's, you feel yourself starting to get anxious, so you imagine that as vividly as possible. And if you feel yourself starting to get anxious, you need to stop, go back, reset your relaxation state, and then reintroduce it. And the idea is that as you're able to imagine more and more vividly these stressful situations and maintain, because remember, your brain can't tell the difference. Even though you're not actually going through it, if you can imagine vividly, imagine it, your brain thinks that you are going through it. And if you're also forcing yourself to stay in this relaxed state, your brain starts to associate this situation with this relaxed state. So that's the idea behind, using the relaxation and desensitizing your stressful situations through it. So that was a really big takeaway for me, to be totally honest with you. I thought that was actually a pretty cool thing that he talked about. Like I said, he went into more detail about how to, some different ways to induce relaxation. And like I said, went into detail about how to use deep muscle relaxation itself. So the kind of some other random notes kind of coming towards the end of my notes here. Psyching up, that was kind of something I found interesting he talked about. He used the term chaining. And psyching up, it's very individual to a person, a sport, and an event. And this is basically your series of rituals that you use to get yourself ready to compete. And so, almost anyone who's ever competed in something has found some ritual, whether it's one or two things before you start, or whether it's from the minute you wake up that day to the side of the bed that you get out on, to what you have for breakfast, that's how far some athletes take this idea. You know, music comes into this, what kind of music you're going to listen to, when you're going to listen to it, things like that. So what you do is this idea. I kind of like that idea of like chaining these different things together, and think about like, how can I kind of create, I'm leading up to this race, and so I want to chain these different events together that'll lead me up to that and have me in the best, mental state possible. One of the things he also talked about was introducing elements of competition into your training, basically modeling competition. And, this was something I hadn't really thought a whole lot about, but things like crowd noise, if you don't usually ride with a lot of crowd noise and people ringing bells and stuff like that, like you might try, getting a soundtrack of that. I'm sure it's got to exist somewhere. I mean, there's, the internet, there's everything, you can find anything on the internet. So there's got to be a soundtrack of, a cycling crowd, cheering with the bells going off and all that stuff. And, put that on your iPod and listen to that while you're riding, so that your body gets used to having to react with that extra auditory stress. Things like the pre-event rituals and prep, like I mentioned, you want to have days where you just practice that. Like, you don't want to have to think about anything. You've got that just on lockdown. And then also one thing that I really found interesting and I hadn't really thought about was the time of day and just kind of like the riding schedule. If you always, ride in the evenings and your races are Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock, like you need to have some rides at 10 o'clock somewhere, even if it is your weekend ride or whatever. But, think about that. Sometimes at some point you will want to recreate the time of day that you usually compete at, and also kind of the schedule. So, if you're a four cross racer, a downhill racer, and so you've got, you do a run and then you've got a long delay, a long time off between, runs, between your qualifying run and your final run, you need to practice that sometime. You need to go and do your one run, your qualifying, do a couple practice runs, do your qualifying run, sit there and wait, pretend like it's a competition. What would you do between your qualifying run and your race run, to stay ready to go? You have to practice that. That is definitely something, really good advice and something that I thought that was probably not enough riders think about and may help. So really kind of coming to the end of it, concentration and focus are the key elements to optimum performance. And if the mind wanders, it cannot focus on the task at hand and you'll have subpar results. And we've all been there. And that's one of the things that I really love about riding is that, there's those moments where you get slapped in the face real quick and like, yo, buddy, I don't know where your brain is right now, but you need to focus on what's going on here. And, we find that flow state on the trail because you can't think about your bills or your boss or any of those things that usually stress us out. And so we're able to just get out on the trail, and the trail demands our focus and attention. But I think that if you are aware of that and you kind of are able to hone that a little bit better, it can help you out. So again, the idea is being totally absorbed in the moment. You know, what's also, you know, called mind, no mind, or the flow state, you know, that's the goal. And one of the things that I found interesting is he pointed out that there's four types of focus. You basically have internal and external focus. So internal is like how you feel. External is how, you know, things are going on outside of you, how things look, but basically all the stuff outside. And then you have broad and narrow. So, you know, broad would be focusing on, you know, the whole, the whole trail, and narrow would be what happens when you roll up on the lip of a big jump, and all of a sudden it goes from like broad to narrow. Your world becomes that lip as you're focusing very intently on making sure that you're timing your pop, you know, right off of that specific spot on the lip. And then once you do that, it goes back to broad as you start to like take in what's going on. Where am I in my flight, my trajectory, spot your landing? You know, as you're coming back down, boom, it goes back down to narrow as you focus in on what's happening. And then it goes back to broad. So the same thing happens on the trail. You know, when we hit those things, it really force our attention to narrow. And then, you know, we got to expand back out and start taking more in. And so the idea is you can have broad or narrow internal focus. You know, again, how things are feeling. You can be focusing on something really broad, like, you know, butt back and chest down, or you can be focusing on something really specific, like making sure that you're feeling tension in a specific place, that, you know, that you're keeping your shoulders down away from your ears, for example, and you're keeping the tension in your lats instead of letting it creep up into your neck. You know, that would be an example of a little bit more narrowed focus. You know, and then same thing with the external, which I've kind of talked about, you know, your broad versus internal. And, you know, on the trail, that would be taking in a bunch of the trail, and then those moments where we've got to kind of focus on something real specific and then broaden back out. So again, just kind of something interesting to keep in mind. And then, got one more note here. Last thing I'll touch on, which actually I found really interesting, again, to avoid choking. And we've all been there. You have that moment where either the pressure of the moment starts to get to you, or something unexpected happens during the competition or the event or beforehand, and it kind of throws you off for a second. And the ability to refocus on the task at hand is the key to not choking. A lot of times choking is basically people that let their focus get pulled away from the right stuff and started thinking about the wrong things. And so the idea of focusing on the process, how you're going to do it, really helps draw your focus back to where it needs to be, rather than thinking about the outcome or what you want to do. So again, say for example, you're doing a downhill race run. I just keep coming back to downhill because it's just easy examples. But you know, this can happen in any, you know, any event. You're riding along, and all of a sudden your front wheel hits a rock, and you know, you get kind of knocked off course, and you got to put a foot down, and you've definitely lost time. It was no good. You know, if you're a cross country racer, a couple guys got around you. Like I said, if you're a downhill racer, you know, it messed up your run. You never thought about this. And so at that moment right there, you can either, you know, let that psych you out and start to think about, man, that really sucks. You know, this was my big race and I had a lot riding on this, and I really need to do well, and I wanted to get top, you know, three in this race, and I need the points, and you know, now my sponsors are going to be mad. You know, if you start thinking about the outcome of the race, of all the things that will happen at the end of the race, rather than putting your brain right back on what got you there, you know, start to focus on butt back, chest down. You know, steer with my hips, lean my bike over. You know, whatever it is that you need to do to get yourself focused back on riding your bike rather than the outcome. So that's the idea. Focus on the process of riding your bike rather than the outcome that you're hoping is going to happen at the end of the race. So that really helps out, and I thought that was a really good tip. So again, there was a lot of other really great stuff in the book. Like I said, towards the end of the book, he started to get a little bit more into, you know, some different methods and things that weren't, you know, as I didn't think were quite as effective and informative, but if you're really into this, definitely worth checking out. And, you know, again, there's definitely some more information, some things that I didn't touch on that he talked about, you know, the whole idea of how to induce deep muscle relaxation. That's definitely worth checking out. So, again, if you're looking for something to help you understand how to use your mind better to help you perform at a higher level, then definitely recommend checking the book out. But anyway, it's been fun sharing my insights with you. As always, once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. You can check me out on the web at bikejames.com. And you can also hit me up. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just search for the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. And if you don't mind, you like the podcast, give me a little review and let people know what you like, and you know, try to help spread the word. I'd appreciate it. So I guess that's going to do it for this podcast, and I'll talk to you in the next one.